This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Adam today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Adam. Welcome back to the Adam Schefter podcast. Happy New Year to everybody, as in happy NFL New Year. With the league year starting and opening on Wednesday, March 13th, the start of all NFL activity, though that will officially get underway on Monday, March 11th. There will be a slew of moves through free agency on Monday, March 11th, as we record this on Sunday night, March 10th, gearing in to the start of the new league year. So happy New Year to everybody. And to ring in the new year, we will be joined today by the new head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, Raheem Morris, who spoke to us while he was visiting Indianapolis at the Combine. We were going to play the interview that week, but with the passing of our beloved and respected colleague, Chris Mortensen, we ran a different conversation last week, held on to Raheem Morris's conversation for this week. And when Raheem Morris got the job in Atlanta, there was an incredible outpouring of support at his selection after he had spent the previous three seasons as the defensive coordinator of the Rams. He was the interim head coach of the Falcons in 2020, and now he's back to becoming the full-time head coach with the interim title removed from him as the new head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. He will join us here in moments. But first, we'll be joined by the co-host of the Fantasy Focus podcast, my friend, my colleague, and the man that spearheads this spot every week, Daniel Dopp, as he quarterbacks the weekly six-pack.
Thank you very much, Adam Schefter. Topic number one for this week's six-pack. Before we dive in, you already mentioned it. Free agency, a lot of guys have either new deals or should be on the move. Before we talk about anybody specific, I just want to ask you, Adam Schefter, the most plugged-in man in the NFL, about the craziest of the start of the league year this week. Yeah. What was the first week of this year like?
Well, it's always like this, Daniel. The analogy that I've used is, if you think back to when you were in college and it was December 1st or 2nd, and you knew you had four finals and two term papers to write, and you knew that over the next 15 days that you were going to be pulling all-nighters in the library, yeah, studying around the clock, not sleeping very well, be very stressed. But then on December 19th, after all that work was done and you were ready to head into Christmas, you're going to feel real happy about getting through all that work. That, to me, is what the start of the league year is like for all the teams, for all the free agents, for all the agents, and for all the reporters. This is, honestly, to me, the busiest single week of the year in the National Football League. The regular season has a certain rhythm and routine to it. The offseason this week, it's stuff flying round the clock. I mean, you just think about everything that's happened. Friday night, just sat down to dinner with my wife and my daughter. Justin Matabike signs a four-year, $98 million deal with the Baltimore Ravens. Saturday morning, and we'll get to this in the podcast. You're not going to believe this travel story. I'm in the airport, and I get a text that Jerry Jeudy's being traded to the Cleveland Browns. Go home that night after my stint in the airport, which we'll get to, and you won't want to miss this. And Chris Jones gets a deal done late in the night, a record deal, and we'll get to that in this podcast. And then Sunday, the morning starts with Mac Jones being traded to Jacksonville, Baker Mayfield returning to Tampa, and so on and so forth. And here we go. And the start of the new league year comes with plenty of fireworks in the own NFL forum, and they will continue to go off throughout this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I think usually by the time we get to the end of the week, the fireworks die down. We return to a little bit of normalcy. But this next week, it's finals week, my friend. That's the best analogy that I could use, is we are back in college. We are all back in college. Everybody associated with the National Football League is going through finals, is writing term papers, is pulling all-nighters in the library, and that's just where we are at this particular point in time.
Adam, I gotta be honest, I love it. This is my favorite time of year. I know it's so busy for you, but there's just news every single day. It feels like every other hour, there's news of another player going to another place. Actually, let's just take that into topic number two. Some of the top free agents, already feel like they've come off the market. And you mentioned a bunch of them, but there are top guys that have either been tagged or have been re-signed by their teams. I just want to ask you, understanding the top of the market feels like so many of those guys have already gone back to where they're originated or where they started. How diluted right now is free agency given all the deals that have happened?
Daniel, the free agent class already is not the free agent class that we thought we were going to get. Chris Jones was supposed to be the top defensive free agent out there. He's off the market. He's got a new five-year deal with the Chiefs. Justin Madubuike, one of the top defensive linemen franchised, right? Well, he's re-signed with the Baltimore Ravens. Jalen Johnson was going to be this great cornerback, but Chicago kept him. Mike Evans was going to be this receiver. Kansas City was going to make a run at him. It's going to be great to match him up with Patrick Mahomes. And lo and behold, he gets a new deal done with the Buccaneers. He's not going anywhere. Baker Mayfield was going to be an option in Atlanta if they didn't get Kirk Cousins. He's off the market. Kevin Dotson, top guard, arguably, with the Rams, re-signs with the Rams. Hunter Henry back to New England. Drew Tranquil back to Kansas City, right? So already you're seeing some quality free agent talent staying where it is, and the free agent class is not quite as deep. And I think when we go into that this week, really the talent to me is at running back. It's at safety. There are some really deep positions here in the free agent class that are still unaffected by the amount of players who have gone back to their teams within the last week. But teams are not stupid, Daniel. When they have a good player, they don't want him getting away. They don't want him hitting the market. They don't want to lose him. And so when teams make moves like this, they don't want to lose their guys. Plus, some of these guys, they know that they don't want to leave, and they also know a good offer when they see it. So these guys have had time to scope out what their value might be, even though it's not allowed. And so they have a sense of what it would be if they got to market, and they're not taking the offer if they feel like there's a better offer out there. And in most cases, there's not. And so you're seeing a slew of these guys come off the market already, re-sign with their teams, and thus the free agent class isn't quite as deep or as talented as we thought it might be.
All right, topic number three, and you already touched on it. I want to go a little deeper, though. Chris Jones, he signed a massive five-year, $160 million. Adam, I understand that contracts don't work this way, but my first thought is, that looks like over $30 million a year for a defensive tackle. Talk to me about the contract, the guaranteed money. What went into this deal?
Well, it's the richest guarantee for a defensive tackle in NFL history. Really, it's the first 3 years of the contract, $95 million guaranteed. Okay. Now, I know we're going to call it 5 times 32. That's 160. The fact of the matter is he's getting paid $95 million guaranteed for the first 3 years. And then the Chiefs will have a decision to make. And by the way, at that point, who knows if he's ever going to see year four or five in the contract? It doesn't really matter. The Chiefs recognize, you know, they're in the prime of Patrick Mahomes' career right now. Look, there were questions about whether Andy Reid would be back. He's back. He'll have a new contract here at some point this offseason. There were questions about whether Travis Kelce will be back. He's back. And then there were questions about whether Chris Jones would be back. And he's back, right? So basically, they're running it back. They're paying a premium for Chris Jones. It'll be the highest average annual salary ever given to a defensive tackle. But that was really, in the end, what got the deal done. You know what? I texted his agents on Saturday morning. I said, hey, this deal's getting done. Congratulations in advance. They said, you're telling us something we don't know. I said, well, that is my job to break news. I'm breaking it to you right now. That deal's getting done. And that's what I told him Saturday morning. And lo and behold, they were able to work out enough particulars to get it done Saturday night, as I suspected they would. The deal comes in. It's a monster deal. And the Chiefs recognized how valuable Chris Jones has been, didn't want to lose him, didn't want him to get to the market, couldn't tag him because they tagged Lajarius Sneed, who they still could wind up trading. And so this is how free agency is kind of interconnected, and they get Chris Jones done before he can hit the free agent market, Daniel.
Something really interesting that you just said to me as a quick follow-up, Adam. So he's 29 years old. To sign a five-year deal means he'd be 34 when this $160 million deal ends out. So like you're talking about, those first 3 years is really where it's at, understanding his age within this contract too.
All right. $95 million guaranteed. He gets it.
Exactly.
He's going to get the $95 million.
Yep. All right. Topic number four. We also touched on this really quickly. Jerry Jeudy being traded to the Cleveland Browns for a fifth and sixth round pick. Why did Cleveland make this trade?
Well, you know what was interesting, Daniel? I remember at the trade deadline last October, and it was very busy. The one trade that I was tracking that didn't get done, I remember 2 o'clock in the afternoon getting word that the Broncos and Browns were not going to complete a deal that they had been discussing. The Browns and Broncos had extensive discussions before the trade deadline last year about sending Jerry Jeudy to Cleveland. And in the end, essentially, they held off from doing it. They didn't get it done. So they held off at that point in time. They didn't make the deal. And now the Broncos had a slew of teams that were interested in Jerry Jeudy. New England, Giants made a call. The Jets checked. Everybody checked in, right? Why would you not check in if you've got a talented wide receiver? And so Cleveland in the end comes back and gets the deal done. And it's fascinating to me because if you look at Cleveland's top wideouts, they wound up giving up a fifth round pick for Amari Cooper. They wound up trading some picks for Elijah Moore, and now they wound up trading a fifth and a sixth for Jerry Jeudy. So where some teams have gone out and drafted great at wide receiver, a la the Pittsburgh Steelers in their own division, it's a situation where Cleveland is traded for all these receivers and has gone about building its wide receiver depth in an entirely different way than other teams. And guess what? It's worked. It's been effective. And I'll tell you one thing else. There was a player this week. I texted one of the Broncos about Jerry Jeudy when there were some teams talking about trading for him. I figured it would be interesting. I'm like, hey, what kind of player is Jerry Jeudy? I was just curious to hear what they say. And the text came back. Jerry has some of the most special talent as a wide receiver with his releases and man-to-man route running is off the charts. He can be great in this league still. So his teammates believe in him. Cleveland believes in him. Browns had a wideout. Not a huge outlay. The Broncos get back 2 picks. They clear out cap space. Jerry Jeudy was in the last year of his deal, scheduled to make $13 million. Denver wasn't going to pay him. Now Cleveland can decide whether it will pay him with having the benefit of having him play for them this year.
Sounds like the Browns are going all in. Amari Cooper, Elijah Moore, Jerry Jeudy, re-signing David Njoku. They are trying to find weapons for Deshaun Watson with the deal that they made in order to make sure that that position plays out. All right. Topic number five, Adam Schefter, the quarterback class of 2021. Oh my gosh, you mentioned it, right? Trevor Lawrence right now is going to have a backup by the name of Mac Jones. 2 first rounders from that specific draft. I mean, this whole thing is wild. Talk to me about this 2021 draft class with the quarterback.
Well, when you look back at that draft class, Daniel, it's really, really interesting. Trevor Lawrence went number 1.
Yep.
He's still entrenched in Jacksonville as the starter. Zach Wilson went 2. The Jets are going to try to trade him this offseason. Trey Lance went 3. He's already been traded to Dallas. Justin Fields went later in the first round. The Bears obviously are open to trading him. Mac Jones, first round, already traded to the Jaguars.
Wow.
So of the 5 quarterbacks picked in the first round, 2 already have been traded. 2 more may be traded as we tape this Sunday night at 6:30. And 1... Trevor Lawrence is entrenched as the starter in Jacksonville. And I think there's a lesson in that in the 2021 draft class. Every year is not going to be a banner, a blue chip year for quarterbacks. Sometimes some of these guys don't turn out to be everything that teams think they are. A lot of times it's how they surround them, the organization they're in, the cast that's around them. There's a whole slew of factors that goes into whether a quarterback develops or not. And in this particular case, the class of 2021, that quarterback draft class, which was so highly acclaimed, which had so much hype to it, now has got a lot of questions to it, a lot of uncertainty as we still wait to see what kind of quarterbacks some of these players will be and where they wind up playing this season. It's possible this season, maybe even likely, that 4 of the 5 quarterbacks picked in the first round in 2021 will be playing in different places in 2024. It's incredible.
It's crazy. And I would assume if they're playing in different places, we'll see how it works out. But it feels like backup duties are potentially in line for some of them. I mean, you look at those quarterbacks, Adam, let's move ahead. Topic number six, because you're talking about quarterbacks right now. There's a team in the NFL that desperately needs a quarterback to take advantage of all of the amazing weapons that they have gathered. Drake London, Kyle Pitts, Bijan Robinson, the Atlanta Falcons. You just mentioned Zach Wilson and Justin Fields and Trey Lance, Mac Jones, Russell Wilson is still available. Kirk Cousins is still available. What do the Falcons do at the quarterback position?
Well, again, we're recording this Sunday night, and I know that there initially was a lot of speculation this offseason about Justin Fields being traded there. Now, that still, I guess, could come back into play, but it never, up until now, gained a whole lot of traction. And it seems like Raheem Morris, the head coach, wants to run the Rams system with his offensive coordinator, Zach Robinson, who came over from the Rams. I think the Falcons would have had some interest in Baker Mayfield if he made it to the market. He did not. Kirk Cousins, they're still interested in. But I think it's a situation where Minnesota is still the incumbent. Minnesota is still where he lives. Minnesota is still the team that he's comfortable with. He does like Kevin O'Connell. So I think Minnesota's got a lot of factors for it. There's been a lot of speculation about him going to Atlanta, and maybe in the end he does decide that. But right now, to me, Minnesota makes more sense than Atlanta does as we record this. Now, these situations are fluid. They're subject to change, and we'll see how it shakes out. But to me, I think if you're going to beat Minnesota, you're going to have to bring it. That's the way it's going to have to be. You're going to have to pull them out of there to get them to want to leave. And right now, I don't know if that will happen. Maybe it will, maybe we won't. We'll find out here early this week. But I would handicap Minnesota in the leader spot, followed by Atlanta, followed by the outside field teams like Washington or Denver. You know, teams like that. I don't think it'll be Washington, but there are other teams that'll have some interest. We'll see how it shakes out. But again, Atlanta would have to pry loose Kirk Cousins. The instinct thing will be if they don't get Kirk Cousins. That means they didn't get Cousins. They didn't get Cousins. They're not getting Baker. What do they then do?
Right.
And do they turn to Russell Wilson? Do they trade up in the draft? What do they do if they don't get Kirk Cousins? That, to me, may be the most relevant, interesting question for an Atlanta Falcons team that has an awful lot of talent, an awful lot of excitement surrounding it. And this is a team that said its priority is to get the quarterback position right, because that's the most important thing it can do this offseason. That will be the big move that they make, but they're already down Baker. They could be down Kirk, and we'll see what the Falcons wind up doing. And I bring up the Falcons, Daniel, because that brings us into our next guest, the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, a man who had widespread support throughout the league, a man who had been bypassed in other years as a potential head coach, a man who finally got his chance as a full-time head coach again this year, years after he was the head coach in Tampa from 2009 to 2011, before he joined that famous Washington staff that included Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan and Mike Shanahan and Matt LaFleur and Mike McDaniel, all those people. Raheem Morris was a part of that staff too in Washington from 2012 to 2014 as the defensive backs coach. Now he's back in Atlanta. He's the head coach. He's been celebrated. He's been saluted. He's been cheered. And he's here today as we celebrate the start of the new league year in the National Football League. The head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, Raheem Morris.
What is this that you got here, Adam? Is this like a Zoom? Is this like an interview? This is like a Zoom interview right here.
Raheem, this is a Zoom interview. We are doing this the week of the combine. I want to be very clear that this is the week of the combine, because I know there are certain rules and regulations as to when you are available. So you are being made available at the appropriate time. I want to state that for the record right now while we have time. At the outset of the interview, no less, right? How you doing?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
First of all, I want to say this. An overdue congratulations. Let me be the last to congratulate you on getting the job. But let me also say, I have never, never in the 35 years of covering this league, I've never seen one team rally around one guy and push him as much as the Los Angeles Rams push you. And you deserved it.
Oh, man.
And it should have happened a long time ago.
But I'm telling you something right now. It was really eye-opening to me to see Sean McVay and Tony Pastores and Kevin Demoff and Les Snead, every single one of them, step to bat to defend you and to discuss why it had been long overdue for you to get the head coaching job that you did.
I mean, that organization, I can't say enough about. Like, to be able to go there, win a championship, go through a rough year, you know, really have a retool or rebuild or whatever you want to call it last year and get to the playoffs. And to be around those people, I thought was special. I mean, and you named the major players in that, but like you got so many people from Artis Timon to Reggie Scott to just all the guys in that building, you know, to Sophie. I mean, you know most of them, but like that organization was really good to me. And it was good for me at the same time. And like, I really think it was good for us to come together at that time to put everything together to go out there and win at the highest level, you know, go through adversity and find a way to build it back and getting great examples from Les Snead and really the ownership, you know, getting the support that came from the ownership. And that it really became a part of, you know, my interviews and who I am and what I've learned and how I've grown and what I was really jealous about that Sean had. And I just thought it was absolutely excellent, you know, from all across the board, all walks of life in that organization.
So you talked about what you learned from them and how you grew and improved. So it was a long time since you were the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers from 2009 to 2011. And I remember when you got that job.
Sure.
And I remember people saying, like, Raheem is going to be a head coach. He might not be ready just yet, but we believe in him enough to give him a chance. And then you got that chance and then didn't get another chance for an awful long time. So what do you learn in the time from being the head coach of the Buccaneers, which ends in 2011, to becoming the Atlanta Falcons head coach again in 2024?
Adam, I think people go about that and think about that in the wrong way. I think everything we do in football is having something to do with growth. And I think myself having a chance to go work with Mike Shanahan and see an authentic two-time championship leader in Washington and have his son work for him and be able to work with some of the bright minds on that offensive side of the ball, whether it was Mike LaFleur, whether it was Mike McDaniels, whether it was all the different walks that were on that side of the football. And along with the defense side, we had Bobby Slowick on the defensive side. We had, you know, Jim Haslett on that side of the ball. Like, people don't realize the experience that you got from that while watching Mike Shanahan, two-time Super Bowl champion, soon to be Hall of Famer coach, do what he does best, right? And lead us all as men. Then having the ability to go be with Dan Quinn and find a way, first-time head coach, somebody you had so much respect for, and you wanted to help at every single level and every walk of life, and you know his passion was the development of players, development of coaches, really the development of people, and getting that from him, right? And that just seemed like another real good opportunity for me to be a part of and to be able to help those guys go to a championship game. And obviously, we lost that one, but there's something to going through that type of adversity with those type of people. When you're talking about Jeff Obrick, now a big-time defensive coordinator in this league, and you're talking about people that have moved on from that organization. And again, we had Kyle Shanahan, Mike McDaniels, Matt LaFleur, Mike LaFleur, all in that building, Bobby Turner, just so many great coaches that you were able to be around and learn from and grow from and do different things with, that I thought that was special. And then, you know, that thing went south. When we couldn't quite put it together and get back to where we wanted to get to. And I get a chance to go out to LA and I just talked about and express the amount of gratitude, the different people that you met. And I think it wasn't about how long, it was about that the growth point from that point when I got fired of being a Tampa Bay Buccaneer coach, that it was a continuous learning process and the ability to help people that you really cared about try to win a championship. Mm-hmm. And I have been in probably in the best space that you can probably be in when it comes to having the ability to do that. And I think that was like the most special part of that journey. So I don't think it was too long. I think it was the right time. And when it happened, I think this is the right place. And I would never take anything away from that.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8 save. That's number 8, SAVE. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8 corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, SAVE. Jet's Pizza, better because it has to be. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Adam today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Adam.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You bring up that Washington staff, and we always see the photos of Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur and Mike McDaniel and Bobby Slowick all being in that staff. People forget you were a part of that staff as well, right? Hey,
it's a couple more. Arby Pleasants of the world. There were people all over that staff that, you got to give Mike Shanahan a lot of credit for just really acquiring talent from the coaching standpoint, developing talent from the coaching standpoint, and really pushing this to a level that, like, I didn't think it was even capable. I watched this man sit in the room and watch RGD tape for days at a time. And then you finish and you think it's over and he has to watch it again. And, like, people don't know the level of commitment that he had to his craft and to the development of his coaches. And it was special, and it was special to be around.
And, you know, people, I remember, ripped that staff for the nepotism involved, right? It was terrible. Nepotism, really, it was really a disservice. Like, really, those people did not deserve to be where they were, right, Raheem? Holy cow.
You know, like, people didn't realize that the real nepotism was me, because I was really Mike Shanahan's son. Because when he left us out at dinner, he left me with the credit card because he didn't trust Kyle.
He left you with the credit card? Oh, my God.
He left me with the credit card because he did not trust his son. So he left me with the credit card. I was responsible for closing it out and getting him back his credit card because there's no chance we would trust him, Kyle.
Well, I understand that. I know what that's about. There's a little history there. We understand what that's about. What did you pick up specifically from Sean McVay, Raheem?
You know, when I got there, it was fun to be around first, you know, to watch Sean's growth and his development from the Washington staff to where he had gone, right? You always knew he was the most curious. He was the most thoughtful, thought out, well thought out human that had been around, even when he was young, right? And then you get to LA, and I watched this relationship that he had built with Les Snead. And Les is his own weird self and his own way, and could be just whatever he wants to be and just dynamic and have these crazy ideas. And then you got this little genius mastermind over here that they get together and they form this little Voltron, right? And it was fun to watch them do that. And then also to watch the support they got from Kevin Dimoff, to watch the money guy, Tony Pastore, sit in the room and just kind of laugh at them all and have to tell them, we can't afford that, or we can, and we move forward. And then it's just watch the overall support from the Kroenke and the Kroenke family. I thought they had built this little, you know, well thought out machine that was built to win and to sustain winning for a long time based off the people. Right. And he had a saying, I know I'm not letting you talk right now. He had a saying, the whole we not me mentality. And then when you got a part of it, it was real. It spread out through the whole building. Some of the people I talked about, when you're talking about Reggie, when you're talking about the equipment room, when you're talking about our team travel, when you're talking about public relations, whether you're talking about community involvement, it just spread throughout the whole building, or at least the people that was in those trailers at that time. And I thought that was a really special place to be and special moments for me in my life, being a part of the LA Ram environment.
And you got a ring. You got a ring that eluded you while you were in Atlanta as part of the team that lost to New England in the Super Bowl.
Got a big ring. Real big.
You like that? Where's that ring, by the way?
It's still in LA. It didn't make the move yet.
Okay. But it will make the move, right?
We'll make the move.
It'll make the move because one day when you get your team where you want it to go, you can say, men, this is what is here waiting for you if you can take care of your business and do what we want to accomplish today.
You know what's funny, Adam, is most coaches and most people think that would be the case. What I found out going to LA is that people want to win for those aging veterans. We have more people in LA Rams care about Aaron Donald and Matthew Stafford to get them a championship than they did the piece of jewelry for themselves. And I think that was the winning edge that we took in LA that year, right? That was the whole all in. They're all in. Oh God, right? This is it. They got to go for it now and don't have anything. But I think think it was more about Jalen Ramsey's of the world, the Cooper Cups of the world, and those people wanting to win it for Aaron and Matthew. And when you felt that, that became more special than even just what we were going to acquire when it came to the ring. And I thought that was like one of the better environments and the better thought out process when it comes to trying to win a championship.
So we keep bringing up the Rams. And when you get the job, I'm curious, I'm sure you got just tons of congratulatory messages from Rams officials. But was there one message that you got once you got this head coaching job that resonated with you, that left a mark with you, that will stay with you for a long period of time, Raheem?
You know, there are so many people that call you when it happens and you get the job. But realistically, it was really the enjoyment of Dan Quinn when I got the job that really stuck with me in a deeper version. You know, like here we're talking about a guy that I worked with in Atlanta that had the job, got fired from Atlanta, and to see the joy and excitement in his voice and everything that he passed for me and was able to help me with throughout that whole process, I thought was really, not to keep killing the word cool, but one of the coolest experiences of my life.
What did he say?
You know, just the joy that he had when I talked to him and the overall support that he had and how happy and genuinely and genuine about the whole situation of me getting the job. You're talking about a guy that was right in the process with himself and dealing with other teams, and for him to take a moment of time in some hotel room and to call me and just be that cheerful and that joyful about it was probably one of the cooler moments for me throughout the whole process.
And what about this new roster that you now are in charge of as the head coach? What are your initial thoughts of the 2024 Atlanta Falcons as they're currently constituted?
You know, I thought when I got the job that it was a good job because of how well it had been put together with just some of the first rounders that you talk about that we know well documented, right? But really how Terry and Kyle Smith and Ryan Pace and really all of our scouts, some that I'm familiar with, some that I'm not, have really done a great job of constructing this roster. And, you know, when you took the job and everybody talked about well documented that we're a quarterback away, and it's probably true. And when you get to this team and you're able to bring the people in the building and you're able to see these guys, you really get excited about the people that you get a chance to work with from a defensive standpoint, from an offensive standpoint, from special teams, including some of the coaches that I was able to keep, right? When you're talking about the Dwayne Leppers, the Mike Petries, and some of those kind of guys. But, like, the building has done a nice job of following our Falcon ethos and acquiring people. It's going to help us win, whether it be players or whether it be people within our communication system, whether it be people within our own group. I just think it's going to be a special place to work. We can go out there and find the right people to continue to grow with that.
Now, you were the interim head coach there not long ago. How many people are with the organization today that you still remember and recognize?
There's a lot. You know, there's probably too many for me to name right now, but the one that's with me right now and David Bassidy and Matthew, they are some of the two people that's been painting into my butts for a long time. and it will continue to be by setting these things up. But you know, there's Willie Thomas. There's so many people. There's people that I was able to bring back, like Steve Skarnecki, and then all walks of life that you've been able to go through with this whole process. Some of the coaches being able to come back, like the Nick Jones of the world, and to be able to do some of those things. But the Brett Jukes, the major one being the Blank family, right? They're not going anywhere. having the relationship that I have with those guys, not having to have the unfamiliar moments of not knowing exactly what your owner wants.
Yeah.
No, it was really clear. And it's really clear on the goals that we have for our team, that the goals that we have for our community and the goals how we want to move forward in order to be our very best versions of ourselves. And like, I think that leadership won't change, but he's also has some different leadership in place, the Rich McKays of the world, the Greg Beatles of the world, whatever your titles are, you can call it whatever you want, mm-hmm. but there's to support you. And you got to be there to support them as well. Like, I think those things are really cool parts about coming back to Atlanta and being part of this family, so to speak.
Do you remember Arthur Blank's message to you when he called to tell you that he was hiring you as his head coach?
No, because he didn't offer me the job. He offered it to my wife.
He offered it to your wife?
My wife took the phone and she took the job. So I really had him in the contract negotiation period for a minute there. I could have took him to the bank, you know, but I didn't.
Is that what happened? He told your wife before he told you?
Yeah, he said hi to me and he said, hand the phone to Nikki. And he offered the job to my wife before he told me.
And how do you feel about that?
It was a good touch. You know, she was trying to be strong-willed. She wasn't going to take it. I was going to finish the process and go through the other interviews. She broke and she took the job.
Well, you know what? I remember that afternoon getting calls. It sounds like it may be Raheem. It sounds like it may be Raheem. I didn't realize that all I had to do was contact your wife to find out that that's exactly how it was going to go down.
Hey, listen, you broke the first one in Tampa. I don't know if you broke this one, but it certainly was going across the ticker pretty quickly while I was on that phone. So you know somebody.
Well, let me tell you something. The way this world works now, Raheem, it is faster than ever before. When you coach in Tampa, it moved fast. It's speed of lightning now.
You ain't kidding, man. It happened so fast. It was almost going across the ticker and going across the screen simultaneously as my wife's on the phone with Arthur Blank. And I'm thinking, I guess I just took the job.
Well, let me just say this. I will say this to the point that I raised earlier. The amount of people that the story seemed to impact, the amount of people it brought joy to, the amount of people that truly felt moved by it was more than any other hire during this entire cycle or any recent hire that I can remember.
You just work with all my friends and Ryan Clark and Dan and Kimberly and you, and you guys just love me. But like, it was great to see the reactions just from the live panel, because I believe it came on right during NFL Live. I don't know if that was planned, purposely done. David Bassidy's the genius maybe, but I thought it was well played, well thought out by you guys.
Me and David concocted that. I know I have to get you out here in a minute, but before I let you go, I do have to ask you about your quarterback situation, because yeah. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, with Atlanta facing the quarterback questions it does, with you being in the position you are today, as you mentioned earlier in Indianapolis, to bring it back full circle because of the quarterback situation, where are you now and what are your team's plans?
So the last person.
By the way, if you just tell me right now, we could put it on the ticker too.
That's what I was about to say.
NFL Live, yeah.
I was just about to say that. The last person I would tell to a person that I didn't want the information to get out to would be you. But with that being said, Adam, I got to have a plan A, a plan B, a plan C, a plan D, right? And we've been able to work on this thing, talking about free agency, talking about the draft, and talking about the trade. And our ability to put these people together and all these guys that we're talking about, the development in this quarterback and the guys who want to be a part of this whole circle and this search, so to speak, almost like looking for a head coach in this process. You want to be tedious, you want to be thoughtful, and you want to have different opinions. And we put ourselves in a position to do the very best things. When I say we, I'm talking about myself, Terry, I'm talking about the Blank family. I'm talking about all of us, all hands on deck, right? To go out here and find the best quarterback for us to go compete and be have sustained success throughout this whole, whatever you want to call it, the Raheem tenure, the Terry Fontenot tenure, who cares? The collaborative tenure that's going to take us to the next step. And I think we put ourselves in the best position to have those things in the different scenarios.
And when you get that quarterback, let David and I know. We could come up with the plan as to how to get the most play for it, give it the biggest bang for its buck, and we'll plan it all out. We'll
go. Hey, let me tell you, I don't think you need my help. With the amount of stuff that you know and the people you know, and as fast as that came out in Atlanta.
Well, I appreciate that. We could always use help. And I want to thank you very much for your time today from Indianapolis, joining us from the Combine. I appreciate you. I congratulate you. I salute you. I respect you. I appreciate you.
Congratulations on your championship with Michigan too, man.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. That was pretty awesome.
Good job, Adam.
There is the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, Raheem Morris. He and the Falcons general manager, Terry Fontenot, face a huge decision about which quarterback to cast their lot with. We'll see the direction that they go. Maybe this week, maybe a later date. We'll see. But that's a huge decision that awaits the Falcons moving forward into the future. All right, Daniel, as we begin this happy new league year, I have one of the all-time travel stories for you. All-time travel story.
I'm ready for it.
So one of my best friends from college, his daughter was getting married this weekend in Aventura, Florida. Okay? My wife and I were supposed to go down on Friday for the wedding on Saturday, rehearsal dinner Friday night, wedding dinner Saturday, and I was going to fly back Sunday morning to come right to Bristol for free agency. Well, we talked about my dog tearing his ACL, being diagnosed with terminal cancer, and my wife did not feel comfortable leaving at home a dog that could barely move by herself, so she was not going to go to the wedding. She was not going to be able to go to the wedding. I didn't want to leave for the extra night, so I changed my reservation from Friday to Saturday, giving me one more night at home. Obviously, with all the free agent stuff coming up, I can work on that, go out Saturday morning, go to the wedding Saturday night, come back Sunday morning. Right thing to do.
Yep, makes a ton of sense.
So Saturday morning, I go to LaGuardia Airport. I am booked on a flight. I get to the airport at 7:20 a.m. for my 9 a.m. flight to Fort Lauderdale. I walk into the airport. I check in. I get my ticket. And I get an email from the flight from the airlines. I get an email from the airlines that says your flight has been delayed from 9 a.m. to 9:33 a.m. And I was like, okay, I got that as I was going through security. So I stopped right there in the American Express lounge to call my wife to do some work, some things that I had to do.
Yep.
Made some calls, went to the gate at 850, walked up to the gate and I said, this doesn't look right. It was fairly empty and the door to the gate was closed. And I said to the ticketing agent, did this flight go? And just as I said that, another couple walked up right behind me and they're like, is this flight gone? We're on this flight. We got an email that the flight was delayed. And the woman said, yeah, air traffic control moved it up and cleared us to resume and go at the earlier time. I'm like, can we get on the flight? She said, no, gates closed, doors closed. We can't let you through the door now.
No way.
I'm like, are you sure? Well, ma'am, I got an email from your airlines that says the flight is delayed till 9:33 from 9 o'clock. I'm at the gate at 8:50, 10 minutes before the original flight, 43 right. minutes before the newly scheduled flight. She said, yeah, I'm very sorry. There was no follow-up email from this particular airlines that, yes, we're back on track. No alert, no email, no nothing.
Wow.
So I was panicked. The couple behind me was panicked. And we're like, when's the next flight out? They said, 10:50. Can you get us on it? Let me see. She gets us on the 10:50 flight. In no time at all, that flight had been delayed to 12:40.
Oh, my gosh.
12:40. I'm on the phone at the airport making calls, working, pissed off. They changed the gate. I go to the new gate from 42 to 50. And turns out that plane is in Atlanta. It's not back yet. They don't know when it's going to be back. So I now begin to look at other airlines. I find another flight to Miami. I book the flight at 1 o'clock. They move that flight back to 128 and say there's mechanical issues.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm not getting on this flight. Now, the wedding's starting at 6 o'clock. It's a three-hour flight. I ran into a guy that played for Michigan, a great guy, played for the Michigan football team. Really enjoyed talking to him. He was from the Miami area. He stopped me at the gate, and we were talking, and his name was Merrill Evans. Very impressive guy. He's like, yeah, it's going to be 45 minutes for you minimum to go from Miami to this wedding site. And that's if you're right on time. And so when they pushed it back again for another mechanical issue, I said, I'm out. Like, no way. I'm not going to make it.
Yeah.
I got to come back tomorrow morning. And because of that original email that I got saying the flight was leaving at 9:33 when it wasn't, I missed one of my best friend's daughter's wedding. We have a great group of college friends, all of us very close. This was the first child that was being married of any of our children.
No way.
Everybody was there. Everybody but me.
Mm.
I spent 7 hours, in the airport at LaGuardia on Saturday, booked on three different flights, didn't get on any of them. And my sister, who also went to the wedding, emailed me this morning, your flight out on Sunday morning at 9 a.m. was pushed back to 1:30, delayed
four and a half hours.
So I said to her, it just wasn't meant to be for me to be at this wedding. It just wasn't for my dog tearing his ACL and being diagnosed with cancer to moving the flight to Saturday to getting the email that led me astray. And you know what's amazing? The airlines was completely unapologetic.
They felt
like it was my fault. I should have been at the gate. No, we weren't responsible for sending a follow-up email. You should be at the gate, ready to go.
You should have assumed that email didn't actually mean anything.
Correct. And that I don't have any work to do, and that I wanted to sit out and make my calls and have the discussion I'm having in a public setting all around people. Like, no, that's all good. So basically, missed the entire wedding. All my friends are there. I want to express my sincerest condolences to my dear friends, the Wallpuffs, and their daughter, Allie, for marrying Alex Small. And it's deflating, disappointing, discouraging. It just pisses me off. The whole thing, the whole thing pissed me off. I'm still mad about it. Like, I was all worked up all day Saturday. Like, you think I want to spend 7 hours in LaGuardia trying to get on a flight to Florida? Like, it was unbelievable. So that was my all-time story.
I can only imagine you, Adam Schefter, trying to have hushed phone calls about the things that you need to talk with people about in the middle of a large open airport and how difficult that is. Like, that just doesn't seem like a kind of situation that you want to find yourself in, Adam.
It was not ideal. I was not happy about it. And again, that's the way it worked out. I missed the wedding, and I'm somebody that doesn't like to miss anything. Like, I like to be on point, reliable, punctual, all those things like that. And just incredible.
This one's not on you, buddy. This one's not on you. But still, I know what you're saying.
So that was my weekend, Daniel. And now we head into the start of the new league year. And we will hope for a little bit of happiness, a little bit of peace and quiet. Again, it's been a challenging few weeks here. I've not enjoyed myself a whole lot, and we know what this week will be. But we do want to thank Raheem Morris for taking time out of his schedule to join us from the Combine in Indianapolis. I want to thank you for spearheading another six-pack. I want to thank Christina Buswell, Sarah Abbott for putting together this podcast, and you, the listener, for tuning in to another Adam Schefter podcast. Please join us again next week. We'll be back in this spot, and we're going to try to reach out to some free agent that found a new home, that's all excited to be where he is, that got the bag, that got paid, and is happy to be where he is. And we'll see how that works out. But we'll be back in this spot next week. Until then, happy new year.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.